Well, it's that time again for our study, little children. It's March 24th, 2023 today, 2112 hours. Ward Green here. Welcome back. I was busy this evening, and that's why I'm so late today. So if you have to go to bed, you can watch this tomorrow. I am saying that I was busy because I was shopping online. I still had not replaced the actual function of my original 50-year-old watch. I didn't get a watch, so I had not yet ordered a watch that could actually perform the functions that performed. And I've been doing a lot of shopping recently, so I'll update you later on what happened. But I was busy, so. It's now March 24th, and we've got the Wild Road article, Part 1, Chapter 4, Paragraph 11, on the docket for today's study. It is, of course, the two ones. If you add one and one, it's two. So the 411 can be a four with a two, which is similar to the numbers of today's date, which is the 24th. So that's how we're keeping track of it and remembering what we're doing. The other thing I was going to say is that I reviewed the Crucible article at the very start of that article today. I looked at the Crucible article, and it was, see, that's Wild Road. Yeah. So the Crucible article is one of the articles. Is this it here? Yeah, this is it here. Yeah, in the Crucible article, it's worth discussing this. So I think I'll put this right in here. In the Crucible article, let me just resize the very beginning of the article, paragraph 1, chapter 1, paragraph 1, it talks about how we arrived at our chronology using the known records from history, and then and chiefly, of course, the Bible, because that's the most reliable source that we have. Of all sources, the Bible is the most reliable. But using that, plus we still needed a lot of other sources besides the Bible, and we arrived at a chronology through a fairly lengthy procedure. And then the idea of the crucible is that we use the chronology as a crucible in order to test facts of history, and to the extent that it's a good chronology, it can sort out which facts are true and which are not true, and that's the way that we illustrate it as a crucible melting metals, where the metals separate as you melt them. In the crucible, the metals become different layers in the crucible, and you can sort out which the gold, of course, would be the one that would be the heaviest or one of the heavier metals, and it would sink to the bottom of the crucible. So we're looking for the most accurate verification of the facts, right? Which is, of course, first of all, we start with the chronology, and then the chronology becomes the crucible in which we test all the other facts. And that was the idea of this, of the Crucible of Credible Creed, was that the first part was arriving at the crucible, you know, obtaining a chronology. That was part one. That's an earlier article, and there were 10 articles prior to that. there were 10 articles. Let's see here. In our previous articles, right? Is that true? There were 10? Maybe there weren't 10. Yeah, in there were 10 previous articles, according to paragraph 1-3 of the Crucible article, the Crucible of Credible Creed. So there were 10 previous articles, but if I jump to the end of this, will I see them? No, we have to go to part 2. To find out, we'll have to go to part 2. If we go to part 2 and jump to the end, then we should be able to see what the previous articles were. Well, we had... That's right, okay. Those are not the previous articles. Not those articles. Those are the references. See if we can get a list of the previous articles. I think we do have a list, possibly. Maybe not. Okay, not in this article. Okay, it's not in that article, but we do have a list at the end of Wild Road. Let's go to the end of Wild Road. That's the Crucible. Okay. Let's go to the... Is this the Wild Road article? Yes. Okay, so our own work. These are references. But we had... Okay. Well, the first article that was chronologically based was the article Green, so that's 5, article number 5. The Crucible was article number 11. So that means that there were 6 articles preceding the Crucible, but there were 10 articles in total, including Harald Hildetan, Skjoldings, Balder, Smith, as the first 4. So actually there were 6 prior to, yes, 6 articles about chronology. That's what I could amend that statement to say. So prior to the Crucible article, there were 6 articles that had this chronology that we call the Greenology. 6 articles preceding this one. So there was quite a lot of work involved, but there were even 4 more articles preceding those. And some of those had to do with chronology in some way, but they didn't have the Greenology yet established. So there were 10 articles. It took 10 articles before the Greenology got to this point, but it took the first 4 articles before we arrived at the Greenology, too, before the article Green, which talked about the Greenology. So there was a lot of work involved in getting the Crucible established before we could start to use the Crucible. And now we're starting to test history using the Crucible. And in paragraph 411 is where we are. So we've talked about Nimrod and so on. So let's read this paragraph. As part of Egypt's first dynasty, Nimrod in Shinar was ruling at a time before the confusion of the languages or the dispersion of the nations throughout the earth. At which time, all men, including Peleg and later his descendants, Terah and Abraham, were living in Shinar. So, in a sense, Peleg lived under Egyptian rule before Egypt officially became a nation, and Shinar likewise. That's a very interesting point, because really, there were no nations at that time. So, are the histories of Egypt and Shinar intertwined? The name China also comes from the name of Shinar. Names like Shinar and Nimrod are important markers to understand the history of Egypt and its dealings with Israel. A nation of Semites who in the early part of biblical history lived in Egypt, however obscurely. Talking about Jacob and his family moving to Egypt in 1914 BCE during the famine. Not knowing a lot about the specifics beyond the Bible record about Joseph and his family from Genesis, and about Moses from the book of Exodus, those are the Bible books, Genesis and Exodus, an accurate chronology is an important basis for knowing when to search for more information. We say when to search and not where, because this search, in the worst case, lacks much direct evidence. Proof of the time period itself is then desirable, but still requires a double-ended approach, meaning that a dated artifact is meaningless without an expected date for the presence of the artifact based on chronology. Uncertainties in chronology, as well as in the dates of any artifacts themselves, may still negate the results, so the problem is managed by minimizing the variables. Time is but one variable and does not in itself prove the identity of what is sought with what is found, but merely increases the probability of relevant searches. If we know when to look in history for a certain event, we increase the probability that we're going to find what we're looking, the actual event, what we're looking for. We're going to find that actual recorded event, or if we know when to look in time. For example, if we were looking for an eclipse that occurred at a certain time of some other events that were happening among mankind, if we didn't know where to look in terms of what date that eclipse was supposed to fall upon, or when in time that eclipse was supposed to happen, if we had no idea when it occurred in time, but we had an inkling that there was an eclipse, we wouldn't be able to find it because we wouldn't know where to look, because eclipses happen at all times in history. They happen again and again. We would not know how to identify that eclipse unless it was a very peculiar eclipse, of course, that was different from all others, which generally there isn't such a thing as that. There are generally similar eclipses that occur at different times in history. That's just one example, but it's true of anything, any event that we are looking for. If we're looking to find an artifact from the time of some, for example, the Israelite nation, the artifacts that they used in their daily activities or things like that, we wouldn't be able to find it if we didn't know what layer in the city in which we were digging we expected to find the Israelites. If we had no idea when in time that we should look, we wouldn't be able to find anything, or we would be very unlikely to find, or much less likely to find something which was related to what we were looking for. So the idea of when to look, this is the idea, this is why the crucible is so crucial, so vital to our search, is it gives us an idea of when to look, because we have the chronology. Now let's do our Bible study for today. Proverbs chapter, first of all, 16 of Proverbs. Look, the scripture from Proverbs for today is from Proverbs chapter 16, verse 7. When Jehovah takes pleasure in the ways of a man, he causes even his enemies themselves to be at peace with him. Okay. So this is this idea also of independent verification. If even our enemies who don't like us or don't love us at all, if they're at peace with us, that's a good sign that maybe we're doing something right, because Jehovah's allowing our enemies to remain peaceful with us. So it's a sign that, it's proof that Jehovah, in fact, takes pleasure in our ways. That's a very, very curious but very valuable scripture not many people perhaps have ever thought of this idea of being at peace with their enemies because of Jehovah's approval. Maybe some of us have thought of it, but have we thought of it independently, or do we need to get the Bible to tell it to us? Anyway, the Bible can also be an independent source of verification for whatever beliefs we have. That's possible too. Now, Proverbs chapter 1, this is almost the opposite of this, idea of it's the same idea of independence. It's the opposite of being together, the opposite of togetherness. In Proverbs 1 and 15, it says, after verse 14, it says, if they say to you, let's go back a little further, if sinners try to seduce you in verse 10, and they say to you in verse 14, your lot you ought to cast in among us, let there come to be just one bag belonging to all of us. And then verse 15, my son, do not go in the way with them, hold back your foot from their roadway. If they try to seduce you, if sinners try to seduce us, that tells us Jehovah doesn't want us to go with those people. We should stay away. We shouldn't join up with a group of people who are doing bad things. Proverbs also, as we just saw in chapter 16, verse 7, when Jehovah takes pleasure in our ways, then we're at peace with our enemies. So we don't have to fear people doing things, you know, being angry with us, or we don't have to fear how people are going to react if we say, no, I'm not going to go with you. We don't fear that because we know that Jehovah is perfectly capable of having our enemies be at peace with us. So we're not afraid. We're not fearing men. We know Jehovah can take pleasure in our ways, and he can cause us to be protected in that way, if not many other ways, in fact. But now let's look at our scriptural chapter for today, which is Genesis 24, corresponding with today's date of March 24. Now Abraham was old, advanced in years, and Jehovah had blessed Abraham in everything. Hence, Abraham said to his servant, the oldest one of his household, who was managing all he had, put your hand, please, under my thigh, as I must have you swear by Jehovah, the God of the heavens and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in among whom I am dwelling, but you will go to my country and to my relatives, and you will certainly take a wife for my son, for Isaac. However, the servant said to him, what if the woman does not wish to come with me to this land? Must I be sure to return your son to the land from where you went out? At this, Abraham said to him, be on your guard that you do not return my son there. Jehovah, the God of the heavens, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my relatives, and who spoke to me and who swore to me, saying, to your seed I am going to give this land, he will send his angel ahead of you, and you will certainly take a wife for my son from there. But if the woman should not wish to come with you, you also will have become free from this oath you gave me. Only you must not return my son there. With that, the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. So the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master and proceeded to go with every sort of good thing of his master's in his hand. Then he rose and got on his way to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. Eventually, he had the camels kneel down outside the city at a well of water about evening time. About the time that the women who draw water were accustomed to go out. And he went on to say, Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, cause it to happen, please, before me this day, and perform loving kindness with my master Abraham. Here I am, stationed at a fountain of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. What must occur is that the young woman to whom I shall say, let your water jar down, please, that I may take a drink, and who will indeed say, take a drink, and I shall also water your camels. This is the one you must assign to your servant, to Isaac, and by this let me know that you have performed loyal love with my master. Well, it came about that before he had finished speaking, why, here coming out was Rebekah, who had been born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, and her water jar was upon her shoulder. Now, the young woman was very attractive in appearance, a virgin, and no man had had sexual intercourse with her, and she made her way down to the fountain and began to fill her water jar, and then came up. At once the servant ran to meet her and said, give me, please, a little sip of water from your jar. In turn she said, drink, my lord. With that she quickly lowered her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. When she was finished giving him a drink, then she said, for your camels too I shall draw water until they are done drinking. So she quickly emptied her jar into the drinking trough and ran yet again and again to the well to draw water, and kept drawing for all his camels. All the while the man was gazing at her in wonder, keeping silent, to know whether Jehovah had made his trip successful or not. Consequently, it came about that when the camels had finished drinking, then the man took a gold nose ring of a half shekel in weight, and two bracelets for her hands. 10 shekels of gold was their weight. And he went on to say, whose daughter are you? Tell me, please, is there any room at the house of your father for us to spend the night? At that she said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. And she said further to him, there is both straw and much fodder with us, also a place to spend the night. And the man proceeded to bow down and prostrate himself before Jehovah and say, blessed be Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, who has not left his loving kindness and his trustworthiness toward my master. I being on the way, Jehovah has led me to the house of the brothers of my master. And the young woman went running and telling the household of her mother about these things. Now Rebekah had a brother, and his name was Laban. So Laban went running to the man who was outside at the fountain. And it came about that on seeing the nose ring and the bracelets on the hands of his sister, and on hearing the words of Rebekah his sister, saying, this is the way the man spoke to me, then he came to the man, and there he was, standing by the camels at the fountain. At once he said, come, you blessed one of Jehovah, why do you keep standing out here, when I myself have made the house ready and room for the camels? With that the man came on into the house, and he went unharnessing the camels and giving straw and fodder to the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Then something to eat was set before him, but he said, I shall not eat until I have spoken about my matters. Hence he said, speak. Then he went on to say, I am Abraham's servant, and Jehovah has blessed my master very much in that he goes on making him greater and giving him sheep and cattle and silver and gold and men servants and maid servants and camels and asses. Further, Sarah, the wife of my master, bore a son to my master after her growing old, and he will give him everything he has. So my master made me swear, saying, you must not take a wife for my son, from the daughters of the Canaanites, in whose land I'm dwelling? No, but you will go to the house of my father and to my family, and you must take a wife for my son. But I said to my master, what if the woman will not come with me? Then he said to me, Jehovah, before whom I have walked, will send his angel with you, and will certainly give success to your way. And you must take a wife for my son from my family and from the house of my father. At that time you will be cleared of obligation to me by oath. When you get to my family, and if they will not give her to you, then you shall become free of obligation to me by oath. When I got to the fountain today, then I said, Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, if you are really giving success to my way on which I am going, here I am stationed at a fountain of water. What must occur is that the maiden coming out to draw water, to whom I shall actually say, please let me drink a little water from your jar, and who will indeed say to me, both you take a drink, and I shall also draw water for your camels. This is the woman whom Jehovah has assigned for the son of my master. Before I was finished speaking in my heart, why, there was Rebekah coming out with her jar upon her shoulder, and she made her way down to the fountain and began to draw water. Then I said to her, give me a drink, please. So she quickly lowered her jar from off her and said, take a drink, and I shall also water your camels. Then I took a drink, and she also watered the camels. After that I asked her and said, whose daughter are you? To which she said, the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Nahor, whom Milcah bore to him. Accordingly, I put the nose ring on her nostril and the bracelets on her hands, and I proceeded to bow down and prostrate myself before Jehovah and bless Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, who had led me in the true way to take the daughter of the brother of my master for his son. And now, if you are actually exercising loving kindness and trustworthiness toward my master, tell me. But if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, from Jehovah this thing has issued. We are unable to speak bad or good to you. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her become a wife to the son of your master, just as Jehovah has spoken. And it came about that when Abraham's servant had heard their words, he at once prostrated himself on the earth before Jehovah. And the servant began to bring out articles of silver and articles of gold and garments, and to give them to Rebekah. And he gave choice things to her brother and to her mother. After that they ate and drank, he and the men who were with him. And they spent the night there and got up in the morning. Then he said, send me off to my master. To this her brother and her mother said, let the young woman stay with us at least 10 days. Afterward she can go. But he said to them, do not detain me, seeing that Jehovah has given success to my way. Send me off that I may go to my master. So they said, let us call the young woman and inquire at her mouth. Then they called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man? In turn she said, I am willing to go. At that they sent off Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant, and his men, and they began to bless Rebekah and say to her, oh, you are sister. May you become thousands times 10,000, and let your seed take possession of the gate of those who hate it. After that, Rebekah and her lady attendants rose, and they went riding on the camels and following the man. And the servant took Rebekah and got on his way. Now Isaac had come from the way that goes to Beer Lahairoi, for he was dwelling in the land of the Negev. And Isaac was out walking in order to meditate in the field at about the falling of evening. When he raised his eyes and looked, why, there camels were coming. When Rebekah raised her eyes, she caught sight of Isaac, and she swung herself down from off the camel. Then she said to the servant, who is that man there walking in the field to meet us? And the servant said, it is my master. And she proceeded to take a head cloth and to cover herself. And the servant went relating to Isaac all the things he had done. After that, Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother. Thus he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he fell in love with her, and Isaac found comfort after the loss of his mother. So we learned that yesterday we learned that Sarah had died, and today Abraham sent his most trusted servant back to the land from which Abraham had come, which was, of course, the land of Mesopotamia, the same land from which we know the nations were spread out after the fall of the Tower of Babel, but also the same land in which Abraham was born. Some 500 years after that time of the Tower of Babel. And we know that the time of Peleg was the time of the Tower of Babel, right, as we read about in our article too. But it was a significant length of time after that that Abraham was born in 2206 BCE, and he was at this time more than 137 years old after the death of his wife, Sarah, if this in fact is chronological, which it appears it is, because now we know this is chronological, because at the end of this chapter it says that the mother of Isaac was already dead. She was lost to him because she'd passed away in death, and that was in the previous chapter, so this chapter appears to be chronologically in sequence with the previous chapter. It's quite evident from that. But not all chapters are in chronological order. We know not all statements of verse or verses in the Bible are chronologically written in order. It's not always true, so we have to be alert to that. But in this case, this is a sequential story. That was quite a long chapter, by the way, was it not? And we see and learn a great deal about how family matters in Abraham's family were conducted. It was with faith in Jehovah, and they asked Jehovah for certain signs that would indicate that they had found the correct woman, in this case, to marry Isaac. But in everything they did, they seemed to put a great deal of belief in Jehovah, and they did that by contemplating in advance what was going to happen. So the servant in advance said to Jehovah, now, if this is the right place, if this is the woman who is the right woman to be the wife of my master's son Isaac, then let me know by having her draw water for me and also for my camels. Let her be indicated to me as being the right woman. So that was in verse 14. What must occur, he said to Jehovah, is that the young woman to whom I shall say, let down your water jar, please, and who will indeed say, take a drink, and I shall also water your camels, this is the one you must assign to your servant, to Isaac. He wanted to have a sign from Jehovah that he had found the right place, first of all, and the right woman, and that she would be, he didn't even know, first of all, whether he was in the right city or whether he was in the right place to meet the family he was seeking. He had no idea, but he had this desire to ask Jehovah to give him a sign. And when he asked Jehovah, then this woman who was Rebecca came out and appeared to him at the well. And she was, in fact, a relative of Abraham, a very close relative of Abraham. And she was a good candidate to be a wife. She was a virgin. She was a very good candidate, so it would appear. And the servant asked her, and she gave him a drink, and she watered his camels as well. And she did that willingly. And then the man was still, he didn't get overly self-assuming at that point. He was still in wonder. He was still silent because he didn't know, in fact, who this woman was at that point. So he asked her, "Whose daughter are you?" He found out she was a close relative. So these events took place in a way that was very faithful. It would appear. It's interesting that Rebecca's family wanted to keep her for 10 more days, and Abraham's servant reacted by saying, "Don't detain me." I think perhaps he knew that 10 days could become 15 days, and that could become just 20 days. Just let her stay with us a few days longer. But it doesn't say what his reason was, why he said, "Do not detain me." There were a lot of things, a lot of events happened in this chapter. It's a very thoroughly documented sequence of events. It's very detailed. It's interesting. Perhaps we wonder whether the servant was writing down all these things, or whether this was written down at a later time. We don't quite have that knowledge, but it's quite unique account of the way of Abraham and his servants, how they acted and how they carried out their assignments. It's quite an eye-opening account. There's really nothing else like it that I can think of in the entire Bible. And then he said, "Do not detain me, seeing that Jehovah has given success to my way." He wanted to go right away because he felt like Jehovah was with him and he should go back to his master and bring the young woman if she was willing. So they asked her if she was willing, and he didn't have to do anything more other than prepare, and he and his men also said something very interesting to Rebekah. They said, "O you, our sister, may you become thousands times 10,000, and let your seed take possession of the gate of those who hate it." So, all this and Laban, of course, invited the man to come and stay with them, and she was Rebecca's brother. But there's one part. It's a long account. It's a very detailed account. Right. About evening time. You notice that it was about evening time that the women who draw water were accustomed to go out and draw water. That's possibly because it was so hot during the daytime, we might imagine. Perhaps that was the reason. And they didn't generally travel in the wintertime either, very much, in the world of that, in that part of the world. It was not typical to travel in the wintertime either, very much. So possibly this was summertime, but it would have been possibly very hot. So the women who drew water would come out when it was cooler, perhaps at evening time, or maybe in the morning too they might have come out. But it looks like here it was customary for them to draw the water in the evening time. It's very interesting, because that was when the man was arriving at the fountain at the end of his day of travel, apparently. Now, he possibly took some days to arrive there from the land of Canaan, where Abraham was dwelling, so could have been quite a lengthy journey. That's the end of our study for today, little children. I realized in my search, my continual search that I'm doing for my watch, or my timekeeping devices, that I have, well, first of all, I had a lot of catching up to do with knowing what the technology has been doing in terms of how much progress it's made over the last 50 years. And with regard to the Swiss watches, there has not been a lot of change, not in the same way that we see in the electronic mechanisms of watches. Of course, there are a great many advances in that area, but not so much in the mechanistic, I was going to say, but they're called mechanical. In the mechanical mechanisms of watches, in the mechanical watches themselves, the mechanisms that are used are still basically the same as they've been for going on, well, many decades now, but going on 200 years now, approaching 200 years that they've been building watches in Switzerland with these winding, spring-driven mechanisms. And they use jewels, and they use lubrication of using oil to keep these mechanisms running without an excessive amount of friction, so they can run for a period of time before they need to be serviced. But the servicing needs to be done too with these devices, so it's going to be some research in many respects. So, but before buying a mechanism, I find it's very useful to determine what the watch is using in terms of what kind of mechanism it's using. So I did a lot of research on all the different mechanisms that the watches are using. But in the end, I think it comes down to something other than that decides which watch you like and which you don't like. But I'd already purchased one watch. It was a very fine watch, but it was not any more than a simple timekeeping device. It didn't have a start and stop chronograph function, which my old watch did have. So I still felt, well, I haven't done justice to the original purpose of replacing that watch. So that's why, well, I'm still going to keep shopping, I'm sure. I'm going to keep shopping all the time because I might find something. I still could buy a very inexpensive watch, too. That you can also buy, which are basically replaceable if they ever do break. And that would also have a chronograph or stopwatch function built into it. But I wanted to replace the 12-hour stopwatch. That my original watch had 12 hours of timekeeping in the stopwatch part of it. So that I never... I never could have predicted how, or I never could have imagined how much work it would be to try and find any watch that would have the functioning, that the functioning and or the same exact basic function that my 50-year-old watch had with regard to the 12 hours of stopwatch timekeeping. That was quite a thing that my watch had. That watch had 12 hours. I wonder whether... There's no way that my watch could have been a Swiss watch. It's not possible, I don't think. But it had 12 hours of timekeeping, of stopwatch, not just timekeeping. It had the regular watch, but it had a stopwatch built in. You can buy these quite inexpensively if you're willing to buy a quartz mechanism, and quartz mechanisms are far more accurate. Quartz is far more accurate than a mechanical watch because the quartz vibrates many more times per minute than a balance wheel on a mechanical watch oscillates. You know, it's so much different. So these quartz watches can be a few seconds per year is the accuracy they can achieve. I mean, it's possible, and of course, at least they can achieve maybe, you know, a very small value of inaccuracy per day, less than 1 second per day or something. But it just depends on which device you are interested in purchasing, I suppose. You can get more or less accurate quartz watches, just like you can get more or less accurate mechanical watches too. But mechanical watches, I mean, 7 seconds per day is pretty good for a mechanical watch. To be wrong by 7 seconds per day, it might average out over time to be better than that, but it might not. And that's just sort of the average expected for a relatively good mechanical watch. It can be worse than that, certainly. And that's not going to be forever. The watch needs to be maintained or serviced if you want it to keep running. And sometimes the service interval can be as short as 3 years, or it could be as long as 10 years before the watch needs to be serviced. So it's a very big decision to buy a watch, you know, that costs, I mean, if you buy a Swiss watch, it's going to cost I guess I shouldn't put a specific price on it, but because there are occasionally sales where these items are sold for less money. But anyway, it's almost $1,000, or at least upwards of $500, to get a good basic watch with a Swiss spring-driven mechanism. Whether it's automatic or hand wound, it's still, they're not inexpensive devices to buy the Swiss devices, and I think it's because of their accuracy, or it's also because of how long they last. If you service the watch faithfully over the life of your usage of the watch, and then the watch can live longer than you, or it can last for, you know, essentially many generations in your family, or it can last much longer than you live, perhaps even for centuries. These watches can be, they can continue running. I'm not sure that that's my intent, or I'm not sure that I'm interested in that, but I think I'd never owned a Swiss watch. That was the big thing. That's the big thing. And you really have to have, well, I've got my Casio watch, and I've got, maybe I can also buy, I just don't really like the idea of having batteries that need replacing. I do like the idea of a spring wound watch, so we'll see what happens with regard to my new passion for watches. I have a new passion for timekeeping in the mechanical watches, and most serious watch collectors seem to be more interested in the mechanical watches than they are in the electronic ones. But it's just that they're more fun, I guess. They're more interesting because there's so much more complexity. If you buy a quartz watch, you can maintain it fairly easily, so because there are very few moving parts in a quartz watch. It's a lot of it's electronic, you see. But I don't like the idea of quartz. I don't know why I don't like it. I guess it's just that I like the idea of the mechanism of a mechanical watch. And I like the idea of, in some cases, winding a watch and seeing it run. I think it's pretty interesting and exciting, especially sometimes since the back of the watch is open and you can see into the watch and you can see how it's working inside while it's running. Some of these watches have that feature. But today I wanted to try and fulfill my mission of ordering the replacement for my original watch, which was closer to the original watch and not just a basic watch. So finally I'm happy, I'm content that perhaps I'm going to be satisfied with my watch passion and my usage, my timekeeping devices for a while, for a few years. Today I feel, in terms of health, I think that I've figured something out, and I don't think the vitamin D necessarily was toxic in my body, to be honest. I'm not sure that that's the case. But today I did take 1,500 units of vitamin D in my liquid K2 that I took, as well as the other K2 that I also took today, which is also not insignificant. So I've taken a fair bit of that vitamin. But vitamin K2, when you take it with vitamin D, it prevents a lot of the toxicity of vitamin D. That's very important. So even though I was taking a lot of vitamin D, I'm not convinced that I was toxic because of the vitamin D. I think now that I was just taking too much calcium. That's what I think. That's what I believe. I don't think it was the vitamin D that was causing the toxicity. I think it was the intake of calcium. That's what I believe now. Interesting. Because the reason, though, is very important to understand that the reason for that is because vitamin D by itself would be toxic. And in most people, they have a problem because they don't know what other vitamin they need. And that is, you need vitamin K2. Our bodies need vitamin K2 along with vitamin D. The vitamin K2 vastly reduces the toxicity of the vitamin D, because vitamin D by itself is poisonous, whereas vitamin D with K2, vitamin K2, which is hard to get in most ways, you can get it from certain cheeses, like I've said, and it is present in grass-fed dairy and meats, but it's hard to get for most people in many parts of the world. And the body can produce some vitamin K2 from K1, which is present in salads and greens and things, but generally we can't get enough K2. If we're taking vitamin D, most of us are going to have a toxicity problem much sooner because we're not taking vitamin K2. And I don't believe that now, I don't believe I was toxic with vitamin D, so I can probably resume the vitamin D again very soon. But I'm not going to rush into it. But I believe that's probably true. The thing is, I noticed my arthritis was acting up today. And that's a sign of vitamin D deficiency. So that's why I think I need to start taking the vitamin D again, so I will gradually try to do that. A little bit of pain in one of my knuckles that is it's noticeable, and it wasn't there before. That's the arthritis trying to get back into my body, creeping back into my awareness and into my body where I don't want it to be. I have to properly attempt very hard to eradicate the arthritis, that's for sure. And that I've already discovered was greatly improved by taking vitamin K2. But I was taking it with vitamin D all that time too. But I just took a large amount of vitamin D, but that's what had me so concerned. But time has told, right? And I've learned already that perhaps it was the calcium, because when I took more calcium the other day, I had a bad reaction too, by too much calcium. And I wasn't even taking vitamin D then. And it seemed to be the same kind of reaction I was getting when I thought I was toxic with vitamin D. So the calcium, I believe, calcium toxicity is another thing we have to be aware of. We shouldn't eat too much calcium. So I can have one bowl of 10 ounces of matcha tea latte with cream and milk in the morning with whatever I want. I can even have sugar with it if I want. I can put maple syrup. It's not going to be harmful. And the sensitivity I was having with sugar back when I quit sugar entirely, and I said I was never going to use sugar again, but that was based on my current state of health at that time, which was very abnormal because I was taking so much calcium at that time. I was taking an enormous amount of calcium. I was having several matcha tea lattes throughout the day. I was having two instead of one. Each time I'd have a latte, I would have another one right after that or something. I was having four lattes or five lattes per day or something. I'm not sure how many. Maybe six on some days. It was a lot of calcium, and I was perhaps just overdosing on calcium. But it's far more complex than that. There are many other vitamins and minerals, too, to be considered. And I'm resuming my boron, my selenium, my vitamin E. Got to keep track of it all. But I'm very optimistic. I'm not overconfident, I hope. It's bad to be overconfident. I'm trying to be, very humble, because you have to be in fear of the true God, of the wonder of our bodies. It's so, so advanced. The way our bodies, the biochemistry of our bodies is so sophisticated. It's impossible to learn it very quickly. And gradually we need to make changes to our diet as we learn things. That's basically how we can do it and stay young and healthy. Health and youth are, I think, attainable much more so than people have been able to realize, and more so than we've been taught too. So this is Ward Green. Again, it's March 24th, 2023. It's 22:11 hours now. It's been wonderful. I lost my focus here on the... That's curious. I lost the light setting that I had. It looks okay, though, on the display, but on the program that I'm looking at. But my iPhone changed the setting. Maybe I touched it. It was supposed to be locked. Exposure setting, that's what it was. But it seems like it's okay. I love all of you very much, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Enjoy life to the full, work hard, and rejoice in all your works, as we are commanded to, also in the Bible. Remember the scripture at Proverbs. Was it 26 and 7, or was it 27 and 6? No, it was 16 and 7. That when Jehovah takes pleasure in the ways of a man, he causes even his enemies themselves to be at peace with him. Praise Jehovah, and may Jehovah bless you as you seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, that all these things may be added to you. And in Jesus' great name, may we continue to do just that. Bye for now.